Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The upcoming legislative session doesn't convene until next week, but there's already news coming out of the Capitol, and we'll take a look at some of the top news stories of 2018 as we're joined by the Dakota Political Junkies. On the panel today, Roger Whittle. He is managing editor of the Watertown Public Opinion. Welcome back, Roger. Happy New Year.
Thanks, Lori. You too.
Also joining us, Jonathan Ellis, investigative reporter at the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Jonathan, thanks for being with us. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Lori.
All right. Let's start by looking ahead before we look back, oddly enough, because I want to talk about Governor-elect Kristi Noem and some of the transition team stuff that we're seeing. It was one of the big news stories of 2018, of course, as we followed the election fairly closely, and now it's time to transition and follow her administration. Roger, how big of a deal is a transition, and what are some of the early the early indications of what kind of governor she will be?
Well, it's very important who the any governor picks to be their in their cabinet. These are the people who they work closest with on a variety of issues. And I haven't seen all of her appointees, but from what I've seen so far, she's picking some familiar names, and she's also picking some people that she has personally known for a long time. So I think that would enable her to have a really good working relationship with these people.
Jonathan Ellis, the Argus Leader, had an interview with Governor-elect Noem and talked a little bit about this notion of her being the first female governor. It wasn't really played up much during the election until the very end, when I at least started getting, direct mail from the campaign talking about the historic importance. But it does seem that she is aware and thinking about the responsibility of this moment of being the first female governor.
Yeah, you're correct that, they didn't play it up during the election, and she repeatedly, during the election said it wasn't a big deal that she wanted people to vote for her because of who she was, as her political beliefs not having to do with anything to do with her, being a female. However, as you point out, at the end of that campaign, they actually, I think, they did some targeted campaigns to try to get some women voters, and the reality was they used this historic possibility of a woman being elected. They used that to try to shore up some support with women voters, because historically, polling wise, Kristi Noem, whether it was in this race or in races when she was in Congress, has kind of been soft with women, and so I think they realized that with this close of a race that they really needed to sort of target women and try to win some of them back in an effort to win the race overall, and it paid off because she won by a very narrow margin.
Roger, why would Kristi Noem not poll well with women? Are there any indications that why women have not come and supported her in droves?
I was afraid you were going to ask me that.
I know.
I really don't know, and it kind of surprises me. I know, every election she's had in the House and before that in the State House were fairly easy wins, where she dominated the election. So this was really the first election where she had what constituted a race on her hands. So, it beats me. Maybe Jonathan has some better insights into why women would not be big supporters of Kristi Noem.
Thanks, Roger.
I know she's very popular around here, but of course she lives here. So
right, yeah. Jonathan, any insight into that? It's just one of those things. It's an ongoing question that we might have to continue to ask.
Well, I mean, I've asked this view of Emily Wanless, who's a government professor at Augustana University, and her perspective. A lot of perspective on this, but for one reason, according to her, women voters tend to skew a little more liberal than male voters. So, if she's a political conservative, that's not going to go over well as well with women. So that's one view, that she's already dealing with voting populace that's going to be more liberal than she is.
And liberal voters this year had a strong candidate in Billy Sutton, so it would be the year where that would be a decision if that's You know, if that's, let's talk a little bit, Roger, about, you know, Governor Dugard said that she can hit the ground running as a state governor because of her federal connections in a way that maybe even he wasn't able to do when he was inaugurated. What does it mean that she has spent so much time in Washington as she moves into becoming a state governor?
Well, she certainly knows how to play the game, as it were, of running a political organization, which is really, you know, the entire state now. Two or three terms in the House, you know, she has a lot of contacts nationwide, good staff members that she has brought with her from Washington. So, yeah, I definitely think that the experience she has gotten on a national scale, on national stage, will certainly translate well into big ability to perform good things for the state.
Yeah. Jonathan, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that she has said, you know, to watch for with her administration, and talking about strong families, for example, being super aggressive, in quotations there, on drug addiction, fighting drug addiction, working on tribal relations, and also this notion of transparency, open government. Both she and Billy Sutton ran on this issue. What are you looking for as a journalist to say, you know, what does open government, what does transparency mean? What do you want? What do you think journalists want from a Noem administration in that regard?
Well, from my perspective, in pure, there has been for a long time, and this changed, I guess, with Governor Dugard, and he, I think they did. He deserves some credit for somewhat of a culture change, but there's still, in my mind, still too much of a reflexive, we're not going to give you this stuff. And in South Dakota's got probably the weakest open record laws in the country, and there are some, in my view, some notable areas that could be improved. One of those is that local and state governments should not be allowed to settle confidential lawsuits. I mean, that's just unheard of in other places, that a local government could settle something confidentially. So that's one particular area. I mean, I think that, you know, again, South Dakota is probably the only state in the country where public officials, their emails are not public records. So that's another area where, you know, as a journalist, we would like to see probably some efforts made at greater transparency there.
Roger, anything you want to add to that list? A wish list for transparency?
Yeah. This is a great topic because, yeah, you know, every candidate claim while they're running says all for open government, and then they get into office and it's business as normal. I actually think that Kristi Noem is serious about this, and she plans on doing something about it. South Dakota has very weak shield laws for reporters, so reporters can be compelled to testify in court, and that's something she wants to change. She wants some kind of common sense laws to protect reporters and enable them to do their job independently. So we'll keep an eye on that. And she's also big on using technology to people's advantage. I mean, she envisions, from what I read on her website, she envisions every state board meeting, every county commission meeting, every school board meeting in the state to be live streamed on the internet, which I think a lot of places do now. But there's a lot of state boards that meet totally, you know, with no members of the public there. So that would be an interesting thing. I know right in Watertown, our city council and county commission meetings are live streamed on the internet, and she wants to expand that throughout the state, which would be a good thing.
Now, her office has said that she's not commenting on prospective legislation, but we are starting to see some hints of what lawmakers are talking about for an upcoming session. One of these is about expanding the requirement for doctors, what they are expected to say to women seeking abortion services. And Jonathan, this is not a new idea to come out of peer. We're going to be talking about abortion this session, for sure.
Yeah, I haven't actually looked at the legislation that's been proposed specifically. I mean, I have seen a KSFY reported a little bit about Stace Nelson, state senator, what he wants to do with regard to require doctors to have to provide, require that they provide a sonogram. I guess I'm not surprised. I mean, we have We have a very, I would say, socially conservative legislature, and we have a governor-elect who has said that she is, as you point out, quote, pro-family, and intends to try to protect the lives of unborn children. So I'm not surprised that, you know, she was very strong on that during the campaign, and I'm not surprised then to see some lawmakers propose legislation that would give them an opportunity to pursue sort of those pro-life platforms.
Yeah. And Roger, in just a few minutes, really, we're going to talk with Don Hager, who's the State Director for Americans for Prosperity, South Dakota. And they're talking about they have filed an initiated measure proposal, kind of looking at what happens to the sales tax rate in a post-Wayfair decision, South Dakota, putting pressure on lawmakers and sort of rallying citizens to say, hey, lawmakers, pay attention to the promises that you made about online sales tax. We're definitely going to be talking about that in an upcoming session, aren't we?
Right. This was one of the big stories of last year, which is carrying over into this year. When online sales tax became a reality for the state, everybody was all excited, but I think a lot of people forgot that our legislature said that any new sales tax coming in from online sources would require a lowering of our current sales tax rate. So there actually would be no new money coming in. And a lot of legislators who signed that are now, I think, you know, saying they're going to rethink it and see what they can do to change the laws to get back to being able to use some of this new money for other things like, you know, more aid for education and things like that. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I know a lot of people in South Dakota are already upset that our legislature for changing their minds on several things or trying to overturn initiatives that have been passed. So it should be a very interesting and tricky thing this legislative session.
And Roger mentioned one of the big stories of 2018. Let's talk about, let's take a time to look back now and see what some of those big stories were. Obviously, the Supreme Court Wayfair decision. Current or outgoing Attorney General Marty Jackley is on In the Moment tomorrow. That was a big choice. Jonathan Ellis, what else sticks out in 2018 as one of the big stories that may or may not carry in to 2019?
Well, yeah, that Wayfair decision was a big one, and obviously I think that was, from a civil litigation standpoint, I think Marty Jackley can look back on that and see that as sort of a big high watermark for him as just an attorney to be able to argue a case in front of the Supreme Court. More on a political side of things, this whole connection that Maria Butina, a accused Russian agent, had here in South Dakota, her relationship with Paul Erickson, a former, current conservative, longtime operative, political operative in the state. That was certainly an interesting development, and it continues to develop. So that will be interesting to see what kind of Russian collusion kind of case, if any of that comes out of this, if this is related at all to any of the other stuff that is ongoing in terms of Robert Mueller's investigation. So this is all very interesting. There are some South Dakota ties to efforts to try to link pro-Russian politicians and operatives with political operatives here.
Right. And in 2018, the economy was a big story. I suspect that that's one of the things that we're always following. 2019 will be story two. We looked at tax reform, Republican-led tax reform in Congress. And Roger, I want to talk to you a little bit about just, when we look at how, the economy has changed in a town like Watertown. A lot of the big stories in Watertown were actually about business and expansions and closings. And so let's travel to Watertown a little bit and talk about some of the highlights in 2018 and, challenges from an economic perspective.
You're right. It was our list of top 10 stories was filled with that kind of thing, although our number one overall story was a local woman being elected South Dakota's first female governor. Even though Christy has been in Washington for a while, we still consider her one of our own up here. She's from Castlewood, a town of just about 10 or 12 miles outside of Watertown. But we have a big industry in town called Terex Utilities, and there's been rumors going along for a couple of years that they were going to be closing and moving all these people elsewhere, and it's one of the city's biggest employers. But during last year, they announced that not only were they going to stay in Watertown, but they're building a new half-million-square-foot production facility right outside of town. That so they will actually be expanding, and that was just, you know, among the best news Watertown could have. We built a new $40 million expansion to our Prairie Lakes Healthcare Center, which is one of the top healthcare centers in the northeast part of the state. We have a new Boys and Girls Club facility, a $4 million renovation and doubling of size of where they were. Mm-hmm. And our airport, I mean, I don't know if readers or listeners statewide remember the problems Watertown was having with commercial air service. A couple of years ago, we went a year without any, no commercial flights out of Watertown. And we finally landed an essential air service provider called Aerodynamics. The first year, they had 10,000 emplanements, which was the first time Watertown had hit that number in a long, long time. And the company has now changed its name to California Pacific Airlines. And they got to the 10,000 mark again this year, a month earlier than last year. And each time it does that, it means $1 million for our airport from the federal government. So now they're talking about building us a new airplane terminal, which, you know, the ramifications of that, you know, businesses need air service to survive.
Right.
And all of our local businesses stress that. And to see our local airport thriving once again has infused a lot of confidence in Watertown's future. LATI, Lake Area Tech, the best two-year school in the country, continues to grow. They're hitting student levels now that they weren't anticipating to get for another 30 years, 25 mm-hmm. years. So business-wise, things are looking good in Watertown, even though we've had our share of store closings, like we've lost Herberger's and Penny's from the mall. But those kind of things seem to be overshadowed by the good news up here.
Yeah. Jonathan, economic growth in Sioux Falls. Talk a little bit about the city and, you know, experiencing some similar things in the sense that, you know, some mall stores have closed. It's always a challenge at a mall, but downtown is currently thriving, it seems. What are some of the big stories coming out of the state's largest city this year?
Well, man, life sounds good in Watertown, I'll tell you what.
Doesn't it? Let's fly up there. Yeah.
I'll have to do that. As you indicate, malls are having their difficulties, and the Empire Mall's had some, you know, pretty big, I think, with Sears and Yonkers. So, you know, how that's going to play out. It's a regional sort of mall. So it has maybe some sustainability that other malls and other parts of the country maybe don't have. So that's evolving. But, you know, downtown continues to be, just growing and lots of things going on there. And I think one of the big stories for downtown and for economic growth in Sioux Falls is that Sioux Steel Company, longtime company, is moving its operations out of downtown and opening up probably one of the nicest pieces of land in all of South Dakota for development. I should point out my wife works there, so I have that issue. But it's still one of the huge stories of Sioux Falls, the Sioux Steel Company, that's going to all be redeveloped at some point right on the falls. I mean, it's just a beautiful piece of land. So that's going to be a huge issue.
That's incredibly important to get right. The rumors must be flying about what the potential, or I shouldn't say rumors, I should say ideas. The ideas must be just popping right now as far as what can be done in that space.
Yeah, well, the owners there of Sioux Steel, the Risen family, have done something I think is kind of unprecedented in that they've solicited, they've had public, you know, a couple of public meetings now to solicit ideas about what should be built there, and so, you know, they're very oriented toward seeking community input. So that's kind of interesting, something you don't normally get.
Right. I'm pretty much looking at this space right now from SDPB's Sioux Falls studio. Yeah. You can kind of look out at that Upper Falls region. It'll be fun to see how that develops. Jonathan Ellis with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader and Roger Whittle with the Watertown Public Opinion. Thank you both so much. We'll see you next time. Happy New Year.